estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 469. I'm Adam and whee! And here's Debbie Melrose.
Ace!
Mary Lang.
I suppose you want me to risk my neck to come and help you.
And Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Tell me, what do you think of the assertion that the semiotic thickness of a performed text varies according to the redundancy of an auxiliary performance codes?
Do you want to have another go at that?
I told you.
It would sound better if you could read it more smoothly.
Have you tried reading that textbook? It is...
Funny enough, no.
No, I'm reading it quite happily.
Lillian Robbins says, and this is going to be a big surprise to everybody, late again.
Well, keeping track of us.
Well, somebody did suggest that, it was you, Kirby, wasn't it, that the fact that we're late might provoke a reaction from Lillian. Right then, this week we're going to be looking at and talking about Dragonfire, but before I say that, I just wanted to point out the reason why I've held back on... I'm not necessarily going to call it a charity by name. It's a charity I'm going to be supporting and mentioning quite a lot. And that is, in our case, Prostate Cancer UK. Obviously, there are prostate cancer charities around the world, and this show supports a lot of them. Men aren't very good at going and getting themselves checked up in regards to life-threatening conditions.
Condition.
Finally, after many, many months, I was able to rather inadvertently get my prostate cancer test done. It's quite a simple test.
How do you inadvertently get a test?
Because I did, many months ago, I had a form that said to get it done in the hospital, and it just stayed pinned on our notice board and never happened. And then when I went to see the doctor in regards to some other tests I had done, I did say, well, I was supposed to get a prostate cancer test, and he must have written it on the list of the blood test I had done a couple of weeks ago. And I just happened to check my notes via the app, and on the notes it lists all the tests I have done regarding the bloods, and it also showed a prostate cancer negative. So then I thought, oh great, now that it's done, I can then now I wouldn't be hypocritical in trying to encourage men to go and get their prostate cancer test. It's very simple. Get a blood test. They will then test it. And if you're negative, you're negative. But they do state that anybody over the age of 50 is at risk. But, you know, you can get it younger than that.
Our own Robert Haynes is being treated for
prostate cancer, yeah. So it's rather topical for us. But I was always going to support this charity before Robert got ill with prostate cancer or was diagnosed with it. So it's a shame he's not on today, but obviously it's not the last time I'll be mentioning it, and we will be talking about it again. And Robert can give his views on it.
He's not feeling quite the thing today, is he? So he's not. He sent us some feedback instead, but
he's starting to have radiotherapy and stuff like that, isn't he, I think. But anyway, so it's quite simple. Go and get a blood test. They check your blood, and if there's anything there, they will then, you know, take you to the next step. But it will save your life if you get it sorted, or should we say it could save your life. Very simple. Get it done. Don't become a statistic. Right then, so let's move on to Doctor Who.
Never heard of it.
So episode one begins.
Oh, do I have to click play all? I guess so.
No, look, you made me do. Play part of that awful theme tune.
It is not awful. I like this theme tune. I like this opening credit sequence.
Okay. Anyway, so a load of people, which is, I think, the Nosferatu's crew, are being marched into this rather splendid set, to be fair, with lots of dry ice and people wearing...
And, Master?
I nearly got the words out. How long was that into before the first interruption? 1 minute and 5 seconds. That's not too bad.
say hello to Tony Asoba for his second of three appearances.
Yes, he used to be in Porridge.
Yes, whatever that is. I only know him in...
Yeah, as if you don't know it. Yeah, right.
Sure you know what Porridge is.
No.
I'll be quiet. Right, yeah, so, yeah, you're right. This is, I'm just repositioning myself. It's his first appearance. We've got stuff coming through on the feed. But I'll try and get my words in. Sorry. Lillian Robbins says, I'll give you a few minutes before getting worried. And we can play this jingle. Yes, Tim Drury. Just popping in to say that the Ace. arrived in this one, and it all goes a bit Raiders of the Lost Ark at the end, and then says lol. So yes, there we go. It's the time for Tim Drury's mention, which we just
Tim
had.
Drury's mention.
No, it doesn't go like that, Debbie. It goes like this.
Tim Drury's
mention.
It does go like that.
Right. Yeah. So The Nosferatu's crew are just about to get have something nasty done to them. But I did notice that one of the chaps that was in what's that series called? London's Burning. He was one of those firemen in London's Burning, and which is topical in some ways because Dipper, Eclipse's original sidekick, was also in London's Burning. That's gone quiet because they know I'm right. Anyway, he sort of gets his hands. You know, it makes me laugh when Kane kills someone with the hands on the face, because you know that everybody does that, don't they? When they've got cold hands, they go up to somebody and they put their hands on their face just to get that sort of reaction. So it's quite funny that
they've all been watching Doctor Who
for method of killing people. My daughter, I don't know if you've heard of it, Isabella, she tends to like to do that when sat at dinner, putting her ice cold hand on my arm. I've learnt to try not to react to it, because the more I react, the more she does it. Anyway, right. So, there's a sculpturer, an ice sculpturer there that looks like the Yitz Man from Monty Python.
Yes.
Oh, wait, and don't you wonder when he's putting his icy hands on someone's face to freeze them? I mean, isn't that burning him?
Well, no, yes. Because he's the source of the. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yes, Mary, I hadn't even considered that.
He's turning his temperature up too much.
Yeah, I would think he would be screaming, you know, and letting go because it would all people.
Maybe
would
he's
be
wearing
so
some special. Maybe he's wearing some special cream. It's a science fiction fantasy TV show.
Yes.
Exactly. Oh, no, come on. Well, you know, it was a case of, well, shouldn't he be screaming as they're screaming? That would be really freaky.
Robert Vince Jr. says, hello, everybody. Let's all get out our World War One German hat out for this one. Yes, I was just about to mention that, but Kirby interrupted me.
Typically, people can't be lay down in a frozen block of ice like that.
Yes, because it's right. That's a good point, Kirby.
Science fiction TV show.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, so Kirby, you get a sort of half-hearted one of these.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, in the TARDIS, the Doctor and Mel have arrived at a very strange view of the planet that we've just seen on the surface of. With when I saw this, the sort of big sort of building on the top of it. Thinking, well, that would make the planet a little bit unstable in regards to when it rotated. It would rotate really weirdly. But it's a science fiction fantasy TV show.
How did the heavier side get to be on the outside, yes?
The Doctor decides they're going to land there. And it's basically like Iceland, which is a freezer supermarket here in Great Britain. What's her name again? The little girl. The little girl is called Stellar.
Actually,
that's
Adam,
played by Miranda. What?
I hate to go back in time. It reminded me more of Bee Jams.
Bee Jams. Oh, I don't remember that. I'm too young.
Are you right? Okay.
They arrive. The Doctor and Mel in this sort of supermarket with a very very dilapidated chest freezer. Bear in mind, this is supposed to be a shop. Surely chest freezers have see-through lids, so you can see the products within.
Well, actually, in B-Jams, you never could. You have to open it up and rummage. I can remember that.
And there was the funniest
scene.
And
besides, it's a science fiction fantasy
TV show.
I'm just going to play. This is the funny scene. Hope you can hear it. As the Doctor and Mel approached said chest freezer. Here we go.
Guests, think gothic.
Did you hear that? That, that was nearly Mel squealing at a tiny little girl with a very strange hairstyle. That's the only time Mel didn't follow through with a squeal. What?
It's kind of like a Wookiee mask.
What, Mel's got a Wookiee mask on? I didn't see that.
No, the little girl.
Oh, okay.
But I'll tell you what, that there's quite a few times in this story where Mel screams and you've just got Ace stood there waiting for her to finish.
Yes. Whee! Yeah, and then they sort of go into the next room, which is like a cafe. And, of course, that at the next table is Glitz. And
yes, the sexual tension is palpable throughout this story.
Is that the sexual tension between Glitz and Ace?
No, Mel, you know.
Yeah, but I wasn't it supposed to be a backstory which was never brought through in the TV version of this, that that Glitz and Ace had been up to no good? Bear in mind, Ace is 16, slightly inappropriate.
Yes.
And apparently it was mentioned, I believe, in a book.
That's what I just... Book. Yes. Yeah, so Terry Miles says, good evening, everybody. And then Rob eventually said, how did Shirley Temple get in this one? Indeed. So, yeah.
The little girl's dress is a little strange.
Yes, all right. We'll move on from the dress now. So Ace is the waitress at the moment. So she's in it for a bit without saying anything. So she's a bit of sort of not oblivious. When you first watched this story, and I seem to not remember that they were going to take out Mel and bring in Ace when the story went on air or whatever you call it. So I wasn't aware that there was going to be a new companion, etc., etc. I may have been. It's a long time ago. Anyway, so she's in there. She's just like an extra.
Galaxy far, far away.
She's like an extra initially, and then suddenly she starts becoming, a bit more prominent as the story goes on. I quite like that sort of gradual filtration. Of a new character.
Because we were just given Mel, weren't we? It was like, bing, hello.
And also the other thing, you notice while looking at the other things in this bar, it's a bit like the Star Wars Episode 4 bar, isn't it? With all these different aliens and people just floating around.
I like the puppet in the one character's lap.
Oh, yes. Sure,
it's a puppet. Sylvester McCoy touches it, doesn't he? And on his way out.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then...
You're saying we just got Mel? Not really, because the series was off the air for what, 18 months? So
no, I'm meaning we got introduced to Mel straight away. She was already there. We didn't.
Yes. I see.
Yeah, she was an established companion when she arrived. Anyway,
she was dropped on us while she was picking on the Sixth Doctor.
Yeah. Carrot juice.
The white soldiers that appear, led by the ginger lady.
Magenta.
What?
Magenta from.
From what?
Let's do the timeline again.
Is it?
The horror show. Why could I not remember how to say that? There you go.
Is it? I can't say I remember that.
Magenta, Columbia.
Yeah. Anyway, Magenta, the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I didn't pick up on that.
I love Rocky Horror.
So do I, but I didn't pick up on that.
Let's do.
We don't have to keep doing renditions of it. Anyway, so Glitz has.
I knew that before I first started watching this.
Yeah, right. Well, Glitz has become detached from his crew.
Yeah, come on. You've got to allow Kirby his kudos.
Yeah. And then the next shot after the Doctor pretends to ignore them is in the sort of inner sanctum of Kane's freezer. And it reminded me a little bit of a more upmarket version of either the Tomb of the Cybermen sort of pods or the Ark...
Master.
In space pods. Yes, does that mean Ian's available?
Yes, yep. Ian's available.
He can should be able to just...
Nice ding was very loud.
He should be able to just join the call. Cause,
join the call, yeah.
Yes. Tell him he can join the call, because I did call him.
Is someone going to do that?
Yeah, go on then.
You're usually the one doing it.
Yeah, so you can take credit for all the technical background stuff.
Just open up Skype and press the join the call button.
That's what she said. All right, so. Oh, I thought that was
you
in
you may join the call from Kirby.
He joined. See, that worked. It's slicker stuff here at the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Hello, Ian.
Hello.
Do you have a quote?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much for asking.
Lovely.
We were just celebrating.
Does everybody else have quotes?
Well, we've done ours.
Yeah, we were just doing the time warp with Magenta.
Oh, God.
Ah, I see. Yes, yes. My quote is actually funny old business time.
Ah.
Ah.
Well done for avoiding anybody else's. That's very good. So I'll tell you where we got up to. We've gone past the bit where they've arrived in the cafe and they've met Glitz and everybody else apart from me is getting obsessed by Magenta from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And the Doctor now has a map.
I didn't remember that or know that till now.
I didn't know.
Yeah. But Kirby was claiming kudos for it.
So Kane is after a Dragonfire thing that is been obsessed. What?
Master didn't realize it.
I didn't realize. No, I didn't. No. Yeah. I haven't watched.
Yeah, through the whole episode, I kept staring at her and saying, "I know her from somewhere."
I haven't watched the Rocky Horror Picture Show for many years.
And she pops up on the Doctor Who convention circuit when there are Doctor Who conventions.
Anyway,
you ought to bring her to the Isle of Wight.
Yeah. Anyway, you could be thinking about something when it comes
to a showing of the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, yeah,
people could just
at midnight.
Can I look at that side of things?
Yes, you can. I actually insist that Debbie takes care of all of that.
Anyway, right then, let's see if I can get this thing to minimize. I'm just minimizing that.
Frightening is that movie now came out 45 years ago.
Oh God.
Believe it.
Right, can we move on from the Rocky Horror bloody picture show?
Yeah.
Well, this isn't the 20 megabyte Rocky Horror.
And we're heading towards Halloween, so.
Yeah.
Auntie Butcher said, "Surely not." And Neil James says, "Good evening, Dragon Hunters." It's more like good evening time walk, blimmin' hunters, the way things are going at the moment. So the Doctor and Glitz go off in search of this potentially non-existent but actually exists Dragonfire thing, while Mel and Ace sort of friend up a little bit. And Ace is quite volatile, but she is a 16-year-old. And the next scene is, of course, Kane going into his little freezer. And we... what gets me is that when Mel goes into Ace's bedroom, it's not as untidy as a teenager's bedroom should be. It was a bit untidy, but I think it perhaps should have been a little bit untidier.
She was a little more aggro than she needed to be in that scene.
And there should have been more cups lying around.
And then we come to the scene where she's obviously got a thing about blowing things up, and she never loses that. And she's got this special thing called Nitro 9.
She doesn't lose that in the book either.
No. And this is the scene.
What a bunch of spots. They'll never get it open at that rate. Here, let's have a couple of those.
You're not going to use those, are you?
If I were you lot, I'd go for your tea break now.
Why? What's in those cans?
Nitro 9. We've got 8 seconds. Last one back's a gooey mess.
Nitro! Everybody get down!
There we go. So the first first ever incident.
That was my first favourite line. I was like, "Ooh, I'm gonna do that one."
And no, it's a bit where she jumps up and goes Ace after the explosion happens.
Ian.
Yes.
Can you guess what my quote was?
No, I can't.
Do you care what his quote was?
I sure could. As soon as I heard it, I knew that was the one that Kirby was
going to do. All right, go on. Give it to me, Kirby.
Well, no, it's the whole thing from the textbook.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Of course.
Of course.
Robert Wench Jr. says, "Let's do the Kirby Bartlett Sloan time warp again." No, let's not. The It's Man statue is coming on a bit. I think it's rubbish myself.
I do too. I'm like, really? Abstract work or what?
Exactly.
Doesn't look. It looks like her. What? Like.
Well, was there a Blue Peter competition for some children to do a sort of ice sculpture made out of something that isn't ice? Because it wasn't very good. So the Doctor and Glitz go around some. This set, and it might be because. I mean, the inner sanctum of Kane's sort of area is brilliant. But when they walk around these alleged icy corridors, you can see it's cling film and bits of
Lighting was terrible. The lighting in it was all the way through was like, let's make it as bright as we can to look like it's reflecting and refracting light.
Yeah, I'm thinking that, you know, on the old tellies, it might not look so obvious, and maybe because we're watching it digitally or whatever, and I should imagine you talk about, you know, enhancing it for Blu-ray, it would be even worse. But it just looks like sheets and sheets and sheets of polythene with some white powder on the floor.
That nobody's breath is frosting, and nobody's slipping around except Sylvester.
Right, yeah. Only Sylvester slips.
Oh, and he does some.
Yeah, he's trying, isn't he? To be fair, to give him his due.
He was doing his best. He really.
This is what I was known for when I did comedy.
Anyway, so Kane interviews Ace about her shenanigans, and Ace survives.
She refuses to touch the sovereign.
Yeah, the sovereign. What is it about the sovereign? Yeah. Is it ice cold or something? I don't know.
Yeah,
people got their marks on their
hand. Old enough to burn its thing on your hand. Right. Yeah.
Burns into your hand.
Anyway, yeah, but she's
one of the bright mass of magenta Jones references.
Oh, okay. Well, she threatens them all with some nitro-9 and then legs it basically with Mel, and they run through some polythene-lined corridors to get away. And the next scene is
a job of standing there while Mel's screaming her head off. She's just stood there waiting.
The next scene always baffled me. There's a scene that there's a quite a nice sort of long shot, obviously with this sort of bit of artwork which he's walking into. Not badly done.
You mean the fact that there's a ledge underneath, but nobody really knows it.
Well, you can't see the ledge from the long shot, but you know it doesn't mean the same. And what if it's white against white? You might miss it. But I've never worked out why. And here he is. He's looking over the ledge, and he hangs his brolly down a little bit and climbs over. What's he doing this for? I know it's the end of the episode and I need a literal cliffhanger. But what was the reason for him climbing over?
They don't establish that there's any other way to get down.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the only way they can go.
Yeah, but
it's never stated that he comes into this. There's a railing. It's like, does that go further down? Is there more down there, or more down there? Or
after I watched this, I read all the blurb I could find about it, and so many people were commenting about this sequence because it's the only way he can go. But how do we know that?
The doctor got there and goes, oh no, I've run out of places to go. I guess the only way is down.
Yeah.
That would have been fantastic. We would have been fine. Okay. Climb down.
Or maybe, hang on, I need a bit of rope here.
Clara is nearby watching.
Is she?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and she didn't even help either.
No.
I know.
That's how hopeless this scene is. Yeah. Clara's just like, the hell with it.
The hell with it. It'll be fine.
The next scene is...
I don't know why they picked that particular scene for Clara and the Seventh Doctor.
Probably because it was just easier to get her in there.
Well, there is no actual scene in that whole segment where she inserts herself into all the Doctor's scenes. Where she is there.
Aston Villa have gone one and up against Liverpool, so I'm just rewinding it to watch the goal. You carry on talking for once, Kirby.
Why are you not playing this trailer?
What trailer? No, you carry on, Kirby. I'm going to try. Villa have scored against Liverpool. This is astounding. Carry on.
God, you're not side watching the football again, are you?
I've got an opportunity.
Side watching the football. Yeah. Welcome to the 20 megabyte side football podcast. with extra Doctor Who.
Yeah. Villa are 1-0 up. Have you finished yet, Kirby? Sorry.
What's Avon doing?
Avon?
I was finished before we decided to watch the football.
Very good. That deserves one of them. That's good.
I thought that was. Oh, I got a bell.
Stuff coming through. Robert Vince Jr. Ace is better than Mel. Ace is going to have to put up with a lot of stuff. Laurie Nick said, hi all, didn't have time to comment, but I always thought there was a missing reel. Oh, hang on. Trapped.
That's an idea.
Of this show or Doctor Who?
What? So Melanie and Ace, Dorothy, come face to face with an attempt to make a creature look like the alien monster. Which makes... Oh, I've got to play this bit. I know I don't normally play so much, but I've got to play this bit. Which is one of the last from the least scariest looking monster. That's why she was screaming, it's not scary at all! It's the end of Doctor Who! Whee!
That's my favourite bit. The bit where she just stood there waiting for Mel to scream.
Whee!
The other thing I don't understand is that they didn't end the episode on the scream. It's like when they
it would have been perfect. She's been trained.
Oh my god, is he gonna fall? Then they cut to that.
The trouble is, Ian, when Bonnie came into the series, there was a sting sound for her to scream to in relation to the pitch. But now all they've got is a which doesn't sound anything like her scream.
In Cartmell's book, The Script Doctor. He jots down this thing where he's sitting up above the set in, I guess, you know, like they have the cameras and the lights are high up above the set. And at one point, I guess, Bonnie Langford wanders out because they were doing something else down there. She wanders out, looks around and says, am I supposed to scream here? And someone says, no, it's not your scene yet. She shrugs and turns around and leaves the set. She just wants to know if she's needed to scream.
Oh dear.
Anyway, so meanwhile, the Doctor is clambering down his umbrella and channeling the Third Doctor with his eye acting and his facial acting. When I'm saying channeling a Third Doctor, of course, I'm talking about Spearhead from Space when he got grabbed by the octopus in reverse.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And then he slides down the slippery brolly and cue title sequence.
Faster.
Yes.
I'm not done. This
is something that they mentioned in the info text, but when Fred and I were watching it before I watched it again with the info text, I noticed it. The Doctor leaves his umbrella there and Ace and Mel find it. And yet there's a scene in the where the Doctor and where the Doctor is in the cabin of the Nosferatu and he has the umbrella during the same time that Mel and Ace are supposed to have it.
So time and science fiction fantasy TV.
No, it's a continuity error. They actually noticed during editing and they did try to cut so you didn't see it very much. But they did know while they were editing that, oops.
Anyway, back to the episode. So I think Mel and Ace find out fairly quickly that the monster's not necessarily going to harm them. The Doctor gets found by Glitz. And you see the shot behind, above him, sorry, and look down, there's an alleged precipice. But you can actually see a tiny little ledge there. Not too sure it's a... It's a viable ledge for them to land onto, but nevertheless, they do. The woman from Time Warp is she's up to something, and then Kane thinks what he's going to use. He's going to use the zombified crew of Nosferatu to go and get Glitz and the Doctor. And then there's a comedy scene in which Glitz has gone down onto the ledge to help lower down the Doctor, who sort of falls all over him and grabs him in some inappropriate places. It's a bit silly. And then conveniently on the ledge is a couple of polystyrene boulders. Yes, polystyrene boulders. And
quite obviously so.
Yes.
Yeah, because when Sylvester sits on his,
if they were really ice, they'd be kind of cold to sit on.
Glad they did well to mask the sound of the when you sit on or stand on polystyrene, it makes horrible noise, doesn't it? So they did well to mask the sound of the polystyrene. Meanwhile, Its Man is finishing his absolutely awful sculpture. Kane seems to be quite impressed with it, so obviously he's not got a particularly good eye for art.
Master, that's ridiculous that I understood that reference. Right away.
We've had lots of Its Men in Doctor Who. They always turn up from time to time. In fact, Actually, you know, he does look a bit like the X-Man, but the man he reminds me most of is episode one of Blackadder 2, Bob's dad.
Bob's dad, yeah.
Right.
Sorry.
Moving on. Sorry, I was just thinking of the references, the lines that Bob's dad had in that one where he's why make a living doing that when you can make a living lying on your back. That one always makes you tickle. Right then, that's right, Bob. I want you to go on the game. Anyway, maybe so I get distracted here. Yeah. So and then after
I want to go on Mastermind and do the Blackadder script.
Oh, I'd beat you easy on the Mastermind at Blackadder quiz, Debbie.
I think I've got an idea for a podcast.
I used to listen to Blackadder 2, 3 and 4 on loop when I was working at Morrison's overnight. So, yes, I'd...
What about one?
All right, so the Doctor and...
So do people want me to post my a picture of my book here, Blackadder, the whole damn dynasty?
Dinah Dynasty. That's a funny. Is that when they were eating a lot?
It's all of the scripts.
Well, there you go. I've got all the 40 Tower scripts. But can we move back to this one? So the Doctor and Glitz manage to get out of the situation, but then Mel and what's the name? Ace get a rope ladder because Ace has all sorts of gubbins in her backpack. They managed to make their way, using partly the Doctor's umbrella when she actually would have been easier just to climb down the ladder.
Master?
Oh, what?
You can see the marks of the ladder on the railing from a previous take as they roll the ladder over the railing.
I hadn't noticed that. You're not going to get a bell for that one, but nevertheless, well done, Kirby.
Wouldn't the ladder go further if they actually rolled it just over the ledge,
maybe,
rather than going up and over the railing,
good
and
television
then,
that way.
You can get another foot out of it, don't you? Lillian Robbins says, "How did Glitz get down if the Doctor couldn't?" That's a point I was wondering. Pardon?
I don't know. He might have a jetpack.
True. And Robert Bench Jr. said he found another path.
Yes, actually.
Another path to a ledge that was in the middle of nowhere.
If he had a jetpack, he was a Mandalorian, right?
Yeah, I'm convinced.
So, Glitz makes it into his rather messy spaceship.
Which
what I did like was
in the banner, right?
The fluffy dice that are in there was highly amusing.
What is it with? I mean, I get that it's a show that's made in on Earth, right? The show, but okay, so. Glitz has got a Stradivarius and a historic painting from Earth,
yeah,
somewhere in some other freaking galaxy. Like, really? Why is that valuable out in those parts?
No, you're not thinking timey-wimey, Ian. Now you've got to think that, a work by Leonardo da Vinci might be exceptionally valuable to a future community of humans who still have the same culture and still have the same history, but yet they live on another planet. So therefore,
that particular Leonardo da Vinci says this is a fake and magic marker underneath.
Oh, be quiet.
Oh, shut up.
Robert Vince Jr. says tea time.
It's tea time.
Right then. The woman from... what's that film called again? The time warp thingy. Rocky Horror Picture Show. Turns up with a big gun to point it at Glitz's head.
I want to go back
and
to
that's
the...
where the... Huh? That's the scene where the umbrella is there when it shouldn't be.
Oh. Ah, well done, Kirby, sort of.
Can you see it, Adam? Are you watching it? Are you looking at it?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, during the conversation, she shows them her little branding that she's got on the palm of her hand. And then we cut back to the finished terrible statue. And It's Man looks quite proud of it. But, of course, in a way, Kane admits it's rubbish because he kills the artist with a loving hold of his face.
And as Andrew says, it's not made clear, but the artist is willingly wanting to die.
I'm not surprised after producing a work of rubbish like that. Notice I did that very cleanly. Lee Anthony Davis says, hello, Adam. Hello, Lee.
Hello, Lee.
This guy's, like, been responsible for countless deaths. But what's this show focusing on? His art fraud. I mean, he's kidnapped a well-known, renowned artist, had him create this fantastic sculpture, and then offs him to up the price.
Yep.
And we're overlooking this. Come on, people.
Blatant art fraud going on.
It is.
So,
come on.
The Doctor and Glitz skulk through a couple of corridors covered in polythene, and then they stand by a door, which quite amusingly, the sparks from the fire at the other side burn the Doctor's ass, and off he goes.
Yeah, he was awfully close to that. I was kind of surprised.
Surprised he didn't set fire to his costume, actually.
And the lines on that bit are just ridiculous, too, because he's saying, oh, it must be going, why are you standing there? And Doctor Who, when stuff like that starts happening, just go, oh my goodness, run! We don't need a breakdown of what temperature he needs to be cutting through the door while we hear the sound of him cutting through the door.
Anyway, so they do run indeed, but then this is one of the first times we've seen a scene where the what's her name, Ace and Mel sit down having a tea break. Now these sort of scenes are quite common in Doctor Who now, these little sort of quiet one-on-one scenes, sort of character establishment scenes. But they weren't that common in Doctor Who at the time. After killing, you know, the It's Man, Kane has a little lie down in his freezer cabinet. There is a plot afoot to turn up the heating.
Well, they're worried about becoming too old and he's going to kill them.
Yeah.
You don't accelerate that bit, really, aren't they?
So while Tony Sober is trying to initiate this plot, turning the heating up to try and kill Kane while he's having a sleep, the Doctor, Mel, Ace and Glitz meet back up again and meet the crew of the Nosferatu, apparently one of which can remember Glitz and how horrible he was to them. He's just about to kill them when the dragon monster, who doesn't look anything like a dragon but looks a little bit more like the alien monster, turns up and saves them.
What I find amazing on Ice World is after you've been frozen, from then on, after you're thawed out, whenever you walk, your footsteps are played by musical notes.
Yeah, it was good though. But I really enjoyed that. That was one of the best bits of the music. Did you not like that, Ian? I thought that was fantastic. Obviously, you didn't like it. Right then, Lee Anthony Davis says, when the show is over, I will share this on my official Doctor Who group on Facebook. I should hope so too, Lee.
Thank you, Lee. I think we don't
want
you all.
Right then, where do we go?
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
And sorry. So's Kirby. Anyway, so Kane wakes up because he got a bit hot. He kills Tony Sober, which is a bit of a shame because it's quite early in the story to kill an actor of his calibre, and then turns the heating back down again. And then the Doctor, Mel, Ace, and whoever else is there arrive in this cave where a holographic sort of message explaining the history of their race and everything like that and what happens to the Dragonfire, etc., is played to them. Beg your pardon?
Pro-am-on.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was doing it.
It's quite good, that bit, actually. I quite enjoyed that scene. And then Kane kills...
Is there a listing of who the actress was who...
Yes.
Yeah.
Who?
Who was it then?
Hang on.
You're just rebooting.
And you don't have the spreadsheet open?
I got it.
He's got it.
Really? You didn't think I'd ask.
Belinda Lee is the actress.
Who?
Hang on, I've just got to carry on talking. I've just got to do some medical.
She looks familiar. I wonder if I'd seen her in something else.
She's been in three. She's been in three stories, and okay. She's always uncredited. She was a Gallifreyan in Ark of Infinity, an Alphan woman in Mind Warp, and Xena in Dragonfire.
Cool.
And never had a credit.
But anything outside of Doctor Who? Or?
Press it in if that's the right place.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'll do that search in a second.
No, thank you, sir.
Okay. Right. Yeah, is that right?
Good. I think you're fit.
Right, I'm back now. Oh, God, sorry, did I miss anything interesting?
Are you being noisy again?
All right, so during this...
We had a philosophical discussion while you were gone.
Ooh. Yeah, quite interesting.
Was it? That was very convincing, Deb. Right then, so during this holographic sort of story, there's what I thought was even funnier than the ice sculpture itself was the woman who the ice sculpture is based on, which is, looks worse than the ice sculpture as well. So maybe the ice sculpture wasn't that bad after all. The woman that Kane was in love with, his wife or something like that, basically.
We've just got done talking about her.
Yeah, well, the ice sculpture
talking about the actress.
So
no, I can't find.
We were talking about the actress while you were gone.
So, right at the end of the episode, the dragon's head splits open in a slightly wonky way, revealing a glowy, crystally thingy with a blue thingy going around it.
What I thought of when I saw that, because
in this cave thing, that the crystals and the backdrops and stuff are sort of like a golden colour, as was the crystal that came out of the head of the thing. It was very similar to that, the crystal effect of 9 and 10's TARDIS. But anyway, the episode ends with Kane being a bit mad, and here we go, I'll play that, but here we go.
3,000 years. The dragon fire shall be mine.
Very melodramatic. And then boring theme music. Eh?
It's like you don't like this theme music.
It's rubbish.
You're doing the theme music for that, and downstairs I can hear Captain Marvel being played.
Oh, is that the same music for Captain Marvel then?
No, it just really weirdly resonated.
Which Captain Marvel, the Marvel one or the Shazam one?
The Marvel one.
Okay.
The Shazam one.
Well, yeah. When I was a kid, the Captain Marvel was the character we now call Shazam.
Right. Back to Doctor Who.
He hasn't lost that, honest. He's quite right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Doctor and the Dragon go off on a little venture to sabotage Kane's project, shall we say?
Furniture?
And
his goals.
Yes. And so basically all the white soldiers are going around with these huge guns skulking around corridors.
It was funny when they pulled out the big guns.
While Glitz and Ace and Mel are told to stay in the cave of crystals. The little girl, meanwhile...
The weird thing is those two soldiers should have been Tony Isova and Magenta, but they got killed off. So
yeah, that was a bit silly, wasn't it, as I alluded to earlier on. So, Stella is skulking around the corridors, hiding under things and smiling in inappropriate times, especially when the dragon comes along. She likes the dragon. He's cute, not.
Fred was going, this kid is creepy.
Yeah. And then Mel and Ace rejoin the Doctor, and, of course, Stella's got a little teddy bear, and the dragon's looking after her. And then somehow, the Doctor and climbs up the stepladder thing that had been put down to get up to the other level. And the Nosferatu is sort of sent away and blown up, much to the horror of Glitz. Very unhappy to see his ship blown up with its crew on it as well.
Master?
What?
Yeah, two stories in a row where entire spacecraft get blown up with people on board.
Oh, dear. Glitz looks a bit cross.
It just happened in Delta.
Okay. Glitz looks a bit cross at this stage. The Doctor and the girls. Now, that pathetic scene where they're heading... Ace is going to say, we're going to see a spaceship. We're going to see a spaceship. I want to see a spaceship. I want to see a spaceship. And, of course, they see the TARDIS. Oh, is that it? Oh. And then, of course, they go in there and say, oh, bunch up a bit, bunch up a bit. And, of course, oh. And Mel, oh, and it's bigger on the inside.
Is
that
it? Up. I hadn't noticed.
And then there's the actress who plays Stella's mum, and she is quite a good and established comedy actress, and I'm surprised they didn't really use her that much in this story. She's just sort of very much like an extra, not an actual, but she's quite a good actress. Anyway, the dragon is killed, because obviously Kane sent his little minions off to kill the dragon to get the dragon fire out of its head, and they sever its head to do this, but they don't get it, because... it's booby trapped. It kills the soldiers, but it does allow the Doctor and Mel to grab the dragon fire. And Kane then grabs Ace, holding on to her. So amazing that she didn't get frozen to death, but he does grab her by the midriff.
He's got his gloves on. He can only do that if he takes the gloves off.
Oh, sorry, Kirby.
And if you watch while he's standing there holding her. When he's getting ready to kill her, you can see him take the gloves off behind her back.
Oh, very good, Kirby. Anyway, so there's a scene of Stella sort of putting her teddy bear on top of the freezer and more or less kissing it goodnight. After a long scene of boredom, the spaceship, which obviously that thing on top of the planet was in fact a spaceship, which in some ways is probably a little bit too big. Yeah, and after a conversation with the Doctor, who does a bit of snarling, which I thought at the time wasn't very convincing snarling, but it's just the way the Seventh Doctor acts, so I accepted it by now. And then the window opens, and some very white hot light pours into the room, and I was quite impressed at the time. Kane's face melts away.
Very Raiders, that.
Yeah.
Yep.
They actually tried to hire the guy who had his face melted in Raiders. For that character.
Oh, that would have been brilliant.
It did work really well.
But that's the same character who had the his hand was burned from the thing in Raiders.
Yeah. Okay.
That's where they got the medallion.
Okay. Anyway, so obviously with Kane's death, that leaves them with an available spaceship, which is claimed by Glitz, who's absolutely thrilled to bits to have this spaceship. But that's fine.
Thrilled to bits.
That's fine. But what I didn't get was Mel decides to leave at that point.
Good,
but why? Why not say, Doctor? I've had a great time. Can you just take me back to Earth? Why would she go off with Glitz in a dodgy spaceship and go that way? Anyway, but
she fancies him.
She's what?
There's no sexual magnetism at all.
No,
she likes a project, all right. When she got there, Colin was with the Sixth Doctor was a bit overweight. She's like,
now she wants
project.
To
cool.
thin off Glitz.
She's going to get him into it. She's going to get him into a suit and tie and turn into a legitimate trading company in which Savlon Glitz sets up his own little empire, and they retire to the Algarve.
I admit there's probably a little bit of a banter thing going on between them, because they had that in Ultimate Flow, Ultimate Foe, you know. But
that's a whole different episode. Yeah.
Are there any Big Finish stories of Glitz and Mel?
Well, it's last time. Sure,
no, not to my knowledge.
Well, there's a surprise. But anyway, so she does go off with Glitz, and she hints to the Doctor that Ace hasn't really got anywhere to go, although they were supposed to be taking her back to Perivale.
The long way round.
Yeah, so the Doctor decides to take her, and then the little girl just has a little cute scene of smiling as the TARDIS dematerialises. End of story. That's the end of that. Dragonfire. Done now. Okay, right. It's not brilliant, to be fair. It's not terrible either. It's got some quite charming elements to it. It's just that the bad bits sort of show up really, really badly. And it's a bit corny, especially the Glitz thing. I don't think it was necessary. I think at the time, as far as I remember, Glitz had become a bit of a fun character, and maybe the people like Glitz will bring him back, and maybe the crew liked having him there. Maybe he was easy to write for. I don't know, but I seem to remember.
Oh, you don't know the backstory there?
What, of Glitz?
Why he's in the story?
Go on, then. Why is he in the story?
This is written by Ian Briggs, I believe. He wrote a character named Razorback that was so much like Glitz that J&T said, I want you to rewrite this slightly and make it Glitz, because he was just so much the same sort of character. And Ian Briggs had not realized it.
I haven't got a major problem with it being Glitz, but it just seemed at the time a bit pointless. There were so many little bits that were I really don't know what to say about this particular story. It's nothing not one I would choose to watch, shall we say. But when having to watch it, it's not one I'd say I really don't want to watch. You know, it's one of those sort of, I know what happens, and, you know, it's not got anything.
The reason to watch Dragonfire is because it's Ace's first appearance.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, but it's all the for that, to watch.
Yeah. Can't really, you know, say much about it, really. It's sort of a meh. Or as Ben would say,
the only reason to watch Dragonfire.
Well, because we're doing the journey. It's probably the only reason, really, isn't it?
No, for to see Ace's first story.
Oh, maybe so. And also see Mel's last story, but...
Yay!
It's not that bad. So there you go. It's okay. What do you think about it, Ian?
Pretty much the same. I like the underlying story, but when you strip it down, you go, well, how many times have we done this? Oh, guy gets put in prison, finally gets his revenge, finds out the person he was spent all of his time worrying about revenge is dead, or has been long dead, or very long dead, or in this case, like thousands of years. And anyway, after like 3,000 years, why would you go blow up a planet that has absolutely no clue who you are? It's like, you're who? Kane? No, sorry, what? If I went home now and went, hey, remember me? There'd be a lot of people who have no clue who I am. And it's like 3,000 years. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, no. Bane? Yeah, what was it? No, sorry, you said Kane? No. it's cashing in on a couple of things, you know, the whole Raiders thing and that. And there's some nice little tidy performances in it. But I think this is the worst outing for Sylvester McCoy thus far as the Doctor. I did not like his Doctor in this at all.
You almost said that too.
And the only bit I like, actually, is the very scene at the end where Mel's leaving and Denise is coming in. That is a really nice scene. I like his performance. It's toned down.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty good.
Silly stuff, and he does the list off at the end. And it's like, what did I get that for?
For pointing out that was a good scene by the Doctor at the end. That was a good scene, the affectionate departure scene. I like that. It was good.
Ian?
Yeah.
You know the history behind that scene, don't you?
Go ahead.
That was that was Sylvester's...
Audition.
Thank you. His audition scene. And he really wanted it, and actually Andrew and Ian Briggs did not want it in there, but everyone else was saying, oh, it's so good, and Sylvester did such a good job in his audition. We need to figure out how to do that.
Yeah. It is. It's the best thing about this story, if you ask me.
Yes.
It was his performance, because to me, that's like, now, that's kind of like it was the post-regeneration scene. You know, that was that bit where you first see the Doctor. That's when I first see Sylvester's Doctor properly kind of together. And that explains it. You know, he sat there and he found his character in that, in that audition piece. And yes. There you go. So, cool. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian. Robert Wrench Jr. says one of the fun part of the story was the melting face. That's what I said. Right. I'm sorry. Who's next? Should we say Kirby sounded like he was itching to say something. So while Kirby's going to say something, I can then pick up on why Aston Villa are beating Liverpool 3-1. It's rather weird. Carry on.
Yay!
The only good part about this story is bringing Ace in. There. I do not like this story. It is unoriginal. It had a chance of being original, but try being more original. Don't just bring in an alien from Alien. Don't bring in multiple Raiders of the Lost Ark references. So many.
Or one now.
Just don't be so highfalutin to name all of your characters after film critics.
I didn't realize there was a film critic called Glitz.
Yeah, they were film theorists, not critics.
Okay, that's even worse. I mean,
it's
I don't like it. I just
don't. You
my least favorite of Sylvester's stories, I believe. Yeah. I even like the runny one better than this one.
The runny ones. Which are the runny ones? The Rani. Sorry, I thought you were talking about the runny ones. Where anyway, the molten lava, perhaps. I don't know. Are you done, Kirby?
After the night of curry. Right?
That would be after me when I was taking the thingy I had last week when I had to do that colonoscopy. What was that called?
Oh, Jesus.
That was awful.
It was toilet humor. Really, Kirby.
Have you done, Kirby?
Sorry.
Terry Miles says, Adam, it's 4-1 now. I'm still watching the Liverpool goal when they pulled it back to 2-1. Debbie, what did you think of it?
Loved having Ace. Loved seeing Ace. She's an absolute shining beacon in Doctor Who. I fell in love with her as a idol and as the best companion I'd ever seen when I was little. I was very impressionable with her. I wanted her jacket. I wanted to have a baseball bat.
It's a shame she won't answer my blimmin' messages. She won't come on the show.
She's absolutely fantastic. I was very starstruck.
My second favorite classic companion.
Okay.
Sarah Jane.
I thought it was Debbie's review.
Sarah Jane.
Yeah. It's never just my review. Come on. No.
Never just anybody's review. No.
Yes.
But I was struck by how bright everything was and how it was showing up. What would have been an absolutely atmospheric set with better lighting, and the fact that the Doctor was the only one acting his socks off about the fact that they were on an ice planet was quite hard to watch that, because he's doing so beautifully and everyone else is just going, yeah, whatever, it's not slippy, that sort of thing, whereas he's there going, whee, woo, off he goes. He's brilliant in this. I really do enjoy watching him as the Doctor. I love him very much, and but I just do not get Blitz, and I do not get why Mel goes off with him. You just spend the whole time, because I know it's happening. I'm just sat there watching for some inkling as to that's what she's going to do. There isn't. She just suddenly just goes, I'm going to do this. It's like, okay, bye then. And the Doctor doesn't go, are you sure? Are you sure about this? Come on, I've been looking after you for so long. Are you sure you want to go? Pardon?
He seems to expect it.
Yeah, but we don't.
Yeah.
So what have we missed? What have we missed? Yeah. She got pictures of him on her room, on the wall in her room or something, and he's been in there or something. that was pretty much the sort of the duck thing.
Is that why she calls her Donut? that was awfully rude. I'm sorry.
Where did Donut come from?
Well, you nearly got a ding then, but I missed the button on the bell. Story of my life, really.
It was too much. You missed the button. Oh dear. I actually quite liked this story, mainly because it's Ace, and I can remember watching this the first time round. But I did find it was a filler story. it felt like a filler story, and I did love the way they gradually brought Ace into the fore, and she just made it pop. She makes this story for me. So, yeah, 4 out of 5 for me on this one from Classic Era. This is the best one I've seen so far in a long time, so I'm quite happy.
Really?
Oh. Okay.
You know how, come on, look how cutting I was last week.
yeah, it's definitely a...
It's all because of Ace for me. There you go.
Yeah, like I said, she's the best thing about
you. You need to message her and get her to sort of, I think she's cross with me, maybe because of the...
Shall I do it then?
Maybe because of the book thing that we should have done a while back, which we couldn't do because of lockdown. I don't know. I did make the excuse. What I'll do, I'll email her literary agents, start off and see if I can get through at that angle. But she's seen all my messages, but she's not responding to them.
I could probably do it. I'll fan at her in a flattering way.
No. Wait for me to contact her literary agent first, and let's see how it comes.
If nothing, I don't have any contact details.
What do you mean?
You can remind her that I took her to a mall.
Oh yeah, that's going to make all the difference, Kirby. I could remind her that I took her behind a partition and had a conversation with her, if you wanted to.
I met her at the airport with a sign of her of Ace hitting a Dalek with a baseball bat.
Okay. Robert Vince Jr. says, "Wow, Kirby Bartlett Sloan, lol." Now that could be sort of what? Be a reference to quite a lot of the things you said on this show.
Yeah, but, what did I say?
Yeah.
Well, something about 3 minutes ago, anyway. Right then. So we're going to play that bit of music again because it's Mary's turn. Oh, slightly muted beginning, but never mind.
Well, let me talk more about this whole 23rd season because I think Dragonfire pretty much brings everything to mind, you know, that is wrong with the 23rd season for me. With Cartmell bringing in all these brand new writers, which were young and idealistic, and Cartmell going after comedy, I mean, he seemed to enjoy the most when the scripts were highly comedic. And then he would be mad when the directors would tone it all down. I don't think anybody knew what they were doing during this season. It is all new faces, all new people, a new doctor who is known as a comedy actor. So that's something that Cartmell wanted to play up. So, you know, it's a natural for Sylvester to just, you know, play to that all the time, which I think really got in the way in this one, because he's been, you know, kind of a comedy actor in every one of the ones before this. He hasn't yet become that secret manipulator yet. You know, I know that's yet to come. You know, I didn't like it. I didn't like anything in the 23rd season because each thing is, to me, is just this disorganized mess. And I did read that the author of this one was overrunning every episode by a good 20 to 30 minutes. So they did massive cuts. There supposedly was much more of a story to that little girl that we never got to see. And I never even got to read any kind of, you know, where was he going with her? What was he going to do? Because she does. Yeah. She shows up. She's kind of creepy. But apparently she had quite a big part that got excised.
Sorry to interrupt, guys, but I'm going to have to go. Isla's hurt herself. She's all right, but I've got to go. Okay. Sorry. Okay. I'll try to get back on in a bit.
Bye.
Hi. Sorry.
Bye.
So a lot of things that just don't make sense in this story were probably a result, you know, of the massive cutting that they had to do. And for me, the best scene in the whole story is Sylvester's farewell, which, you know, as Kirby brought up, it was his audition speech. And he loved it so much that he insisted that it be included in this to say goodbye to Mel. Over the objection of just about everybody else, but, you know, somehow he managed to get it in there. This whole season has been a mess. And I think Dragonfire kind of epitomizes all of that. So, yeah, didn't like it. And Ace. I was wondering, how did she ever become a major companion? Because she was so uneven in this. You know, one minute she's mumbling her lines. You know, the next minute, you know, she's, Ace, and she's right out there full of energy. And I understand that this was her first TV acting job, and apparently Bonnie Langford took her under her wing and was teaching her a lot of stuff of what to do. So I guess we owe the continuation of Ace to Bonnie, and, you know, the kind of character that Ace, or that the actress that plays Ace, that she wanted to be, you know, how she wanted to be Ace and all that. So we kind of owe that to Bonnie, but, you know, didn't care for Ace in this story. And I know going on, I'm not going to care for her as a companion either. So there we are.
Okay. Well, thank
bum,
you, Mary.
Bum, bum.
Right then. So that's it then. Moving on to the feedback section, which Kirby obviously usually initiates. Well, I'll just check. We've got nothing coming through on the feed.
Yes. Let me get there.
Robert Vench Jr. says, milkshake poured on person by Ace. Hope you can get her. And then, well, Mary, last story of the season series, probably why.
So you know, something I agree with Mary for about 80% of this season.
Okay.
I still absolutely love Delta and the Bannerman. So.
Yeah, I mean, right. Hopefully they, you know, and we haven't gotten there yet, but hopefully they get their act together for the next season.
Okay, Kirby, have you got your feedback?
Yes, Jeff Franklin says, Ace! Robert Wentz Jr. says, it's astounding, time is fleeting, madness takes its toll. Ah, but if you listen closely, not for very much longer, I've got to keep control. I remember doing the time. I wonder what he's quoting. I posted a picture where I put together a collage of the little thing from Doctor Who, the unfolding text. Robert Wentz Jr. shows the melting face and says, no more water. And he also has a picture of Ace and the Doctor. Boy, we are going to have so much fun, Ace. Your life will never be the same again. Billy Kirkbright says, I can't find the telly version on iTunes. All other sources have proved unreliable unless I buy the DVD, which I'd need to order online. Hence, no feedback from me this week. Looking good for next week, though. Robert Wentz Jr. says, sorry to hear that, Billy, but you could try Daily Motion and see if it's there. Oh, I didn't say that right, did I? It should be Daily Motion.
Too late. You said it.
Yes. Billy says, thanks, Robert. Robert says, no problem.
Magic. Magic.
Adam says, magic.
Well, he's licking his paw a little bit too much for my liking. It was sounding revolting.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, my review of Dragonfire. So this is the last story of season series 24. Season, by the way. In this story, we say goodbye to Hurricane Bonnie and hello to Ace, Sophie Aldred. The exiled Kane, the baddie in this one, looks for the power source for his prison ship, which has become Ice World. He wants to escape and return to his home world, probably to get revenge for what they did to him. It's great to see Glitz again from Trial Story. He's stuck there to pay his debts off so he can get his ship back. He sells off his crew, which in turn are turned into frozen zombies by Kane. Then the quest of the dragon, which we find the power source in its head. We get the introduction of the new companion that we find out was brought there by a time storm. Great guest stars in this one, including Patricia Quinn as Balash with her white German World War I hat, double-crossing and backstabbing in this one. One thing that puzzles me, why would Mal go with Glitz after all the bad things he did? Check and see why things were dinging.
Don't worry about dings.
Yes. Ding. She must like the bad boys. I enjoyed Ace pouring the milkshake out. The dragon needed more work, and the cliffhanger of McCoy hanging off the side of the cliff reminded me of Sarah Jane's situation in The Five Doctors. No, it was worse. Also, the melting face at the end was very Raiders of the Lost Ark. Really?
You've done something naughty.
All in all, very enjoyable and entertaining. My rating 3.5 out of 5. Neil James says, Dragonfire, this one is set in a place called Ice World, so why don't any of the cast look cold? It's fun to see Glitz again, and McCoy has some wonderful moments of clowning in their scenes together. Ace is introduced well, and she has instant chemistry with the Seventh Doctor. Her slang is a bit cringy, but Sophie Aldred gives it her all. Edward Peele's performance as Kane is very sinister and well-pitched, and he probably and he's probably the best thing about the story. His relationship with Balazs is both interesting and tragic. It's great. It's great watching the. Someone tell her to stop.
Sorry.
Just read.
Okay. It's great watching the amazing background customers in the space cafe scene, and I love the Doc getting bitten by the little monster. The alien-inspired dragon has a nice design, but is a bit embarrassing in execution. The studio setting often looks cheap, and some parts are far too overlit. And that first cliffhanger really is rubbish. We say goodbye to Mel, which is a nice scene, but having her go with Glitz was a bit of a stretch. Still, there's plenty of other stuff to enjoy, including the Doc's chat about philosophy with an excited guard, Kane's Raiders of the Lost Ark moment, and the first signs that the Seventh Doctor may be a little darker than initially expected. Watchable, if a little average, 3 stars out of 5. Ian Kirk's script, and that's all I have.
Hey, well, thank you very much, young Kerb. Oh, hang on, the dog's trying to clamber on the arm. I need that arm. Oh, I don't want to kiss. Get off. Sorry. Oh, he's obviously done something. He's never normally this affectionate. This he's done something. Terry Miles says, good evening all. I will be busy this weekend, so may miss the live podcast. Here is our feedback for this week. Another bit of stunt casting. There is Patricia Quinn, Magenta from Rocky Horror, a great actor. Great to see Tony Selby. He is brilliant as Glitz. Has he ever been in Big Finish Glitz, by the way? I just have to ask this question.
I don't have any recall of a Glitz character in Big Finish.
Great to see Mel still there. Yes, I did mean to spell it that way. That's M-E-L. Oh, great, as in G-R-A-T-E. I beg your pardon. He's shivering. At last, Ace is here, even though as an annoying teenager, soon to be the centre of the arc. Or an arc, sorry. The cliffhanger at the end of part one was, well, it should have been Ace with Mel screaming, as always, at the dragon instead of ho, 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 the doctor hanging off a cliff. Yeah, it's probably right, actually. Why was Stella in it? Was she the director's, producer's, or director's general's daughter? And why did her mother not get killed with all the rest? The rest of the cast could have copied the Doctor and acted as if the floors of Ice World were slippery. That's what Debbie said. It must have been a bit of a change for Sean Blowers to be frozen instead of being very hot in London's burning. Yeah, very good point again. All in all, Linda and I thought this one was okay. Looking forward to the next one, as I have done some research for Kirby. Here's one of Kirby's and Ian's. The BBC said this was the 150th Doctor Who story, but it was really the 147th.
Yes.
As they had counted
the numbers four they gave it wrong.
As they had counted four parts of Trial of a Time Lord as four separate stories.
They are.
Now walk away and put the kettle on while someone rants hee-hee. I'm going to be concerned about this dog. As to Linda and Terry Miles, thank you. The dog is shivering. That's probably your voice that's making him shiver again. What a mad magic. Right, I'm going to put him on the floor. All right. God. What else have we got here? Right, we've got this, which will require...
Robert Haynes sent in a...
Did he send it? Where did he send it? Via the chat page?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll let you read that one in a minute, Mary, but we're going to do this one.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
Zoanon, what is your mission?
To explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no AI has gone before.
It is actress Dakota Johnson's birthday today.
Oh.
I hope it's a belter. Dragonfire by Ian Briggs. Doctor's a new companion who calls herself Ace. Her real name is Dorothy. I guess we are not in Kansas anymore. I've been watching some of the original 1939 Buck Rogers serial. In that, most of the Earth is ruled by a criminal called Kane, who has an army of memory-wiped soldiers. Sabalam Glitz is back. That means actor Tony Selby has to have his sideburns done again.
Yes.
Mel deciding to team up with Sablon Glitz is typical companion leaving ridiculousness.
Yes.
Mel is from Peace Pottage, a village near Crawley in West Sussex. I assume it is on the creepy side of Crawley. I thought the creature was well done, considering it is Doctor Who and overlit. High death count again.
Yes.
Almost everyone on the colony dies. Bye for now.
But Ian, and well done for the creep Crawley joke. That was really good. You could have saved that one up, though, for the end of the month, perhaps. I don't know.
Master?
Yeah. Don't exhaust yourself all in one go.
Master, that Buck Rogers thing is probably just a coincidence, because up until the right before they started filming, Kane's name was Hess.
Oh. Yeah. Right, on the live feed, we have... Milkshake poured on one person by Ace. I've done that one. And then, then he says Sylvester will be heading to the dark side going on. Yes. He'll even get a darker jacket in the last series. Right then, Mary, you said something from Robert had come through.
Is Debbie back?
I am indeed.
Oh, jeez. Oh. God. Ah, oh, blimmin' heck, no.
Sorry.
Right. I'm happy to read Robert's review, because Debbie's probably going to get the other review.
Well, I don't know. So far, we haven't got anything come through from Mr. Butcher.
Oh, wasn't he going to do an audible one?
No, he got put off because he sent one through once, and I didn't know he'd sent it, and I didn't play it.
Very, very rare for him not to send something.
Well, he hasn't.
Is
well,
he
I haven't
watching?
Got. Stop nagging him, Kirby. Do Robert's one, please, Mary.
Okay, Robert's review is, I like Dragonfire, but like so much 80s Doctor Who, a lot of it is overlit. The lighting does no favors to the set, which can make everything look plasticky. While Sylvester is acting his socks off, making it look like he's slipping all over the place, perhaps it would have been wise for him not to. The others aren't, so it only makes him look silly in comparison. Mel goes down after knocking her head. Well, not really. She missed the railing by a mile. Maybe it was something she drank. The darkness, had they had it, would have done wonders for the creature, which obviously took its design cues from the creature in the Alien movies.
Well, there you go.
And that cliffhanger, in quotes, part one ending. It was made clear that he'd had nowhere else to go but over the railing. Then it may have made more sense. It's also not made clear that there's a ledge further below the doctor. Surely he could have slid a little down the ice onto the ledge then. Hindsight is a good thing, though, and they were always under pressure to get things done. Nice to see the Seventh Doctor's character grow more. His lovely ending speech with Mel is great, though it should have probably been built up more than she was tiring of being with the doctor. Sophie's Ace was still a bit rough around the edges, but she's done such a good effort and made such an impact in her first story. How can you not fall in love with Ace from the get-go? And you can see that she and Sylvester hit it off straight away. I loved the Kane face melt. Wonder where they stole that from. Some nice model work, especially that shot of the star spaceship spinning around. That's another season of Classic Who that's gone in the blink of an eye. Really looking forward to tackling the next season. Hope to join you lot next week, health willing.
Yes, well, take care, Robert. Thank you very much. Brilliant. Right, I'm just going to check that nothing's coming through from the butcher department, because that would be quite apt, wouldn't it? Because it was a freezer shop that they arrived in. So I'm just checking the butcher department. Oh, waste my blooming self on this one. Right then, where do we go?
Sorry for giving you the cold shoulder.
Oh,
I combined air, cold, and shoulder, like a shoulder. Anyway.
Yeah, you've got one of these. They don't come out very often, so that'll do. Right then, so we can do. He has got time to contribute some blurb for one of the girls. We'll have to flip a coin via our smart speaker friend to decide which of the girls may or may not read the feedback of Mr. Butcher. But in the meantime,
He sent some?
He hasn't sent any, no, but I'm just padding to give him a bit of time to actually get it together.
I'll read it. Mary read the other one. That's the way it works.
Okay, right. Yeah, but we haven't got anything for anybody to read at the moment. So.
Well, if it comes through, I shall be ready to expose.
That's not that sort of show, Debbie. What you do in the privacy of your own home.
Standing by, ready to serve.
Wow, things are heating up on me.
Right, Doctor Who news. I was unaware of this. Frank Windsor has passed away at the age of 92, legendary actor from Z-Cars and, of course, 92? The King's Demons.
Wow.
Didn't realise he had died. Peladon. The latest edition of fanzine Peladon has just been released. Issue 10 looks at the criticism received by recent series of Doctor Who and asks why it has become so toxic. I presume they're talking about the current Doctor Who rather than the Peladon. Doctor Who magazine special edition, which has the TARDIS and a Dalek on the front cover, and the slogan "From sketch to screen, production design, creating the worlds of Doctor Who." That would be quite interesting if you like Doctor Who magazine. And then they hark on about Time Lord Victorious again. So if anybody actually wants to indulge in the whole of Time Lord Victorious and wants to speak about it on this show, they are most welcome to do so. Don't think there's anything else really coming up. Has anybody heard anything that hasn't been mentioned on DoctorWhoNews.net?
No.
It's all gone very quiet over there.
No, I haven't got anything extra.
Okay. Well, I did get something through from Lavazzi, which is quite handy in some ways, because that means I don't have to say the same blurb over and over again. I got an email from a chap, which starts off with a very cute statement. It says, "Hi there, this is Alex from Lavazzi. My boss, Meninda, suggested I drop you a line. I hope you're well. We've recently produced a Doctor Who fan fiction anthology."
So they
really do like Doctor Who at Lavazzi, even though they have lots of other, you know, genres and things for sale. But they do have a particular affiliation, shall we say, to Doctor Who.
I just liked the picture that I posted. So where's his feedback?
Yeah, you should write under that thing. "It's all very well liking my picture, Mr. Butcher, but where's your contracted blurb?"
Debbie,
yes?
Do you know where do we keep his pills?
Whose pills? What, Alan's pills?
Not
or mine?
Chimney.
No, Kirby's. he's now stalking a contributor to the show.
Calm it down, Kirby. I'm going to phone your wife at this rate.
Ooh, Debbie.
Ooh.
Right then, where do we get up to? Yeah, so like I say, Lavazzi are doing a fan fiction anthology. So, in fact, once upon a time, do you remember a bit of fan fiction that we had on the 20 megabyte page many, many years ago, actually, about it was like a Dalek story that was tagged on to the Invasion of Earth story that was contributed. It was on. And then I reposted it for anybody who missed it. Anybody remember that? It was a while back. Hello?
No.
Well, you said you'd seen it, Kirby, when it was actually posted on the 20 megabyte page.
I didn't look at it.
You didn't look at it. Well, thank you, because it was written by me under a pseudonym. So
really?
I'm letting that out now. It was written by me under a pseudonym, and if you want to read it, you'll have to go back through all the years of posts we've had on the page. But yes, I just thought I forgot to mention all that time that I actually wrote that.
No,
I'm not going to repost
it.
There's a very good reason. I did repost it once because I was trying to get somebody to sort of say something about it, and then I thought, well, no one's saying anything.
You reposted it within the past couple of days.
No, I posted it all that time ago.
What's it called?
I can't remember.
What if you can't remember?
It's not called I Can't Remember. I literally can't remember what it was called. I remember essentially what it was based around. It was based around the lead up to the Dalek Invasion of Earth story. So what, it was like a little filler story to that lead. No, where we join that story is after a, almost like a.
What was the pseudonym?
Right, that you... I'm going to say this. It's not like talking to the wife. This magic. I'll say it one more time. I don't remember. Right, because everybody, as everybody else, noted what I just said and understands the words "I don't remember."
I was trying to search for it.
You won't find it. Anyway, he bet he won't. Actually, he's on a challenge now. That'll keep him quiet for a bit. Right, yeah, let's see if Mr. Butcher has.
Something, anything, and he would have disappeared.
Oh, hang on. I've got Alan T. Butcher. It says, "Be careful with this message, Alan Butcher has never sent you messages using this email address. Avoid replying to this email unless you reach out to the sender by other means to ensure that this email address is legitimate. Report phishing looks safe," it says. I think it's safe, so I'm going to click on the looks safe button.
So, was that fan fiction associated with Lavarzi?
No.
No.
That's the Lavarzi thing just reminded me that I'd done it, because that essentially was fan fiction written by myself. So that was the sort of thing.
And what was the subject of the fan fiction? Maybe I can find it.
It was a Dalek thing, but you've got to remember, the word Dalek is going to appear on our page quite a few times. Now, I feel that my little spinny disc of doom, I'll stop spinning now, is sort of almost... just led me, because Mary read Roberts, we're going to send this one to Mrs. Melrose. Are you feeling up to this, Deb?
Yeah,
hang on.
Pardon? Yeah.
Oh.
Just getting your Facebook up.
No, I'm just sending it to you now. There you go. So thank you, Alan, for working through my filling bits so we can listen.
By the way, Alan T. Butcher says, "I have now emailed it again."
Oh, jeez. Yes, we've established this because I've just sent it to Debbie. That.
Yes, I know, but I am now deleting the...
Alan sent it straight to me as well.
Oh. Don't get emotional, Deb.
I am deleting the comments.
Don't get emotional, Deb.
That's right. His favorite, Debbie.
Has anybody got a hanky for Deb?
I'm just writing, "Honored I got this direct, Tim." Oh my god. Okay, I'm going to absolutely mess up this first paragraph at least, and then it will just go downhill from there. A retinoid, L-ascorbate, and tocopherol supplement, or your vitamins A, C, and D have arrived after 3,000 years. Wow. And it's just gone all the way up. Hang on a minute. There we go. Sorry about that. There. Dear 20 megabytes, Dragonfire is, of course, a closely studied parable of the importance of taking account of the bigger picture when goal setting. Obviously, Cain's capacity to apply himself to seeking his freedom is excellent, albeit fairly unhurried. His project management skills seem to be very accomplished, having developed a complex commercial establishment from a very unpromising scenario. However, we get a hint of his failings when we realise he did not schedule the procurement of power source earlier in the process, even though it only takes two people maybe half an afternoon to get the head off the Jailer Dragon thing. However, his two big mistakes are to set the parameters of his goal too narrowly, as vengeance on his own people and failure to account for geopolitical and astrophysical realities in judging the urgency of completion. Having discovered his simple errors, his plan goes into complete meltdown and comes to nothing, as does he. It should be noted that while some suggest that Mel's decision to go off with a corrupt, callous, mass-murdering slave trader was a bit surprising, in fact, some women like a bad boy. It is obviously heavily implied she has fallen hard for him, as she is delighted by coming across him. She shows she is a devoted apologist for him throughout and believes his heart is in the right place, and she keenly asserts that wherever he's heading, she wants to go all the way with him, whether as a threesome or a couple.
Oh, there you go.
Beats the hell out of the build-up for Leela and Andred's nuptials. We also learn that DCI Mark Perrin left the Yorkshire Police in the Hartley area, where he had known a lady, yes, a lady, Police Inspector Kate Longton, call sign Juliet Bravo. Sadly, he became cold-hearted and turned to crime. He took with him Jock McLaren, formerly an inmate at Slade Prison, and forced him to have vocal training to lose his Scottish accent and change his name to Crowker. All in all, Dragonfire is not too bad. Sylvester McCoy is settling in better, so whilst he is not quite comfortable in his skin at all times, he is clearly developing into a credible doctor persona. His philosophical exchange to distract the guard is his best moment yet. Sophie Aldred is very green as an actor, but given she is battling with some very badly judged synthetic youth-speak, she has to get a decent pass here on her first appearance. Bonnie Langford definitely does the best thing she's done for the programme and her career by leaving. She takes little or no blame for the vacuity and incoherence of her character. The best supporting cast this series provides a good backdrop for a standout acerbic performance from Patricia Quinn. There is sadly a plot hole bigger than the gap in Smaug's armour. Why Kane's incarcerators thought the best way to stop him from getting a power source to power an escape vehicle was to leave it in his jailer's head rather than take it with them when they left is anyone's guess. However, good characterization and depth of villains and grey area minions demonstrates well the harsh circumstances and menace, even if the denouement is an anticlimax. The story is perhaps 11 episodes too short, as then you could have dispensed with the previous three stories and developed a more coherent notion of how Dorothy made her way off Earth. Next up, Doctor Who and Dalek Conquest of Stairs, or No Wonder Omega Has Nobody Left If People Keep Stealing His Body Parts for Tools. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
It's Yay. Omega, by the way.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, thanks, Alan, and for getting it in quite short, what do you call it? Well, you know what I mean. Right, so.
Earlier, so.
Yeah. Sorry, I've just got distracted because the current score is Aston Villa 5, Liverpool 1. Now, I hope Liverpool are able to achieve deficit. It's a good thing. I hope Liverpool are able to achieve that deficit for the rest of the season. Yes. Man United fans were fretting because they got stuffed by 5-1, I think. Was it 6-1? By Tottenham. At least the Man United fans will be able to watch this game and feel a little bit less aggrieved. Right then, so where are we up to? Oh, I did Lavazzi, didn't I? So, like I say, go to the lavazzi.co.uk and have a look at their fan fiction. Kirby's gone very quiet, so he can say he's still... I mean, I could have though I did do that fan fiction,
could
I could...
give me more information, I could find it. But
you won't
find it.
You won't find it. I can't even know.
You know when?
What? When? I know! What you said that, for God's sake. Where'd I get up to, Kirby? Oh, yeah.
Whowon.co.uk.
Yes, it was. Whowon.co.uk. I've just seen if they've got any new things, new bits and bobs coming through on their fantastic website. They have indeed. Keeper of Trakan. Audiobook by Terence Dix. That's available to buy, along with Time Lord Victorious, The Knight, The Fool, and The Dead by Steve Cole. A hardback book. And of course, we mentioned last week that Enlightenment, Save Our Souls, also available, Torchwood Story, and a Doctor Who story. So let's see what's coming up on pre-order. Eighth Doctor Time War 4. Ooh, that sounds quite interesting. It's £40 though, if you want the CD of four discs. Running time, 240 minutes. Flying Dutchman and Displaced. A Seventh Doctor Big Finish story. And, of course, other things available. The Graham O'Brien figure, which seems to be in the pipeline, but I have mentioned previously, but you can get some really good Doctor Who figures in B&M in Great Britain. Just saying. And the only thing also people living in Great Britain can actually buy product from our other sponsors, iwheroes.co.uk. But if you move to the Isle of Wight, just saying, it'd be quite a good thing to do, and you can actually go into Heroes, and every time you buy a Funko Pop, you get a raffle ticket. And also you get a stamp. You get a little stamp card, like you would do in a coffee shop. You get a stamp card.
I've got one of them from last year, so obviously it won't work now.
What, the stamp card?
I've still got the stamp card in my purse.
No, it does work. They're still valid. Even the ones that say the old name of the shop on it, which I've forgotten the name of. When you fill up the stamp card by buying Funko Pops, you get a free Funko Pop. Which is very good. And also, like I say, you buy a Funko Pop, you get a raffle ticket. And every month, they raffle off some really good Funko Pops. Now, we've been trying for months to try and win the Umbrella Academy It's the convention Funko Pops, you know, the ones that you can generally only buy at conventions. So these are the rarer Umbrella Academy figures. So, yeah, it's a really good service. Move to the Isle of Wight. Buy something from Heroes. In fact, I suppose even if you're visiting...
to the Isle of Wight specifically, too. Yeah.
That's an Isle of Wight sort of niche thing, isn't it? A benefit of being on the island. But if you don't live on the island, visit their website at iwheroes.co.uk.
Visit the island and visit.
Okay. You can still buy Funko Pops and all sorts of other geeky things. I know there's a new range of Asterix figures that were on the desk when I went in the other day.
Wicked.
And I know I should do a video, because I know Alex Watts has done a video within the store, but you're not allowed to watch that, because I want to do one myself. And we'll have a look at all the fantastic items. And as I say, I've got a couple of comics. I don't know, do you get some free comic book day over there in the United States?
Yes, they do. Kirby tells us about it every time.
Because the comic I got for free was... I
would miss it most of the time because it was almost always the same weekend as Hoolanta.
Yeah.
And I had to decide, okay, am I going to leave Hoolanta and go get free comic books? And although a couple of times they would bring the Doctor Who one to Hoolanta.
But Liverpool have pulled a goal back. Anymore. Liverpool made it 5-2 now. Villa are on the chart. Oh, sorry, Kirby, you finished. Right, sorry. Just what I asked was, do they have it in America? I probably invented it. Anyway, my free comic book was this for the viewers' benefit. You can see that. It's called Invincible. So it's part of a new comic book hero called Invincible. And it's made by Image Comics. Now, the reason why I wanted to say about Image Comics...
Is it Invincible? I mean, if you ripped it, would it not rip?
The reason I wanted to mention about Image Comics, because I watched a film on Prime about Image Comics, which was very interesting indeed. And don't ask me what it was. I think it was called Image. I can't remember anyway. So if you want to watch a very interesting film about, or it's a documentary film about the creation of a comic book company, an independent one, that's a really good one to watch. Talking of stuff I've watched on telly, I did watch something else that was very good. Now, oh yes, I think. Hang on, I'll have to get it up, which means.
That's what she said.
I knew you'd say that. How predictable. It's on Amazon Prime. If I can find my stuff to watch on here, bear with. It's a Doctor Who thing, so that's why I wanted to make it a point of. Oh, for goodness' sake! Sorry, because I'm trying to talk to you sideways on, it's making it rather difficult here. Prime Video, that's what I'm looking for. No, you can think, but I haven't got Prime Video. Well, I'm sorry. You have to have Prime Video in Britain to watch this particular feature. Deb can watch
not
it.
Not necessarily.
Either.
What is it?
I'm looking for Jeffrey Kiefer. Right, my stuff. I wouldn't be looking through it if I remembered the title of it. It's called Ten Spotting. It's a 13-minute film made in 2019. And the blurb is, 1 year ago, Angel met her perfect man at a Doctor Who convention, but she never got his name. Now she travels with friend Tamara to the same convention to find the guy.
Now, is it ten spotting as in T-E-N?
Yeah, ten space. As in the tenth Doctor, ten spotting. T-E-N-S.
One word or
ten? One word, ten spotting. Ten spotting. So that's worth watching because it's very short and it's quite charming. Thoroughly enjoyable for Doctor Who fans. Okay, it's painless to watch. Believe me, it's quite good.
Oh, I'd like to watch it.
What?
I would like to watch it.
Well, watch it. It's good.
It's on Vimeo.
Good. That's good. There's also a thing about Neil Gaiman called Dream Dangerously, which I haven't watched yet. Comic Book Man. There's. I did mention last week that Enola Holmes. Which is Millie Bobby Brown thing on Netflix is exceptionally good as well. And the other terrible news we've had on the Isle of Wight today and probably around Britain is that Cineworld are closing all of their cinemas. So we've only got one tiny cinema left on the island. So what's going to happen then?
Master?
Yes, dear?
It's the same as our Regal cinemas. And that's the main cinema that I would go to here in the town I live in.
Well, hopefully long term it'll mean that independent cinemas might reopen, because a world without cinemas, it's really not worth it, is it? I know it's all COVID related, but I'm really disappointed that the governments haven't parachute paymented them or whatever like that to keep them going. I know also the film industry is loaded, so really they need the cinemas to be open. The film industry itself, somebody should do something. Just saying.
Master?
Disney should buy all the cinemas. They've got loads of money, haven't they? Yes.
I just posted a link to the YouTube copy of Tin Spotting.
Splendid. Thank you, Kirby. Just saying, it's worth watching.
And personally, I would not want to go to a cinema until this particular virus has been dealt with.
Yes, but we still need to have cinemas to go to when things do eventually go back to a nearly normal, because it's never going to be completely normal, let's face it. But normal enough that enough people have had COVID and were living with it and think, well, let's go to the cinema and just be sensible. If that's
okay,
possible.
I've just downloaded Tin Spotting so I can watch.
Yeah,
it
thank
online.
You for the commentary, Kirby. They did have in Heroes the police are there. Andy Summers, Sting, and of course Stuart Copeland. And I'm very tempted to get those because they would go right nice next to my Queen figures. I just wish they re-release the Beatles. Right, so I've got, they've even got Elvis. I mean, this is ridiculous. How can they have Elvis, not the Beatles? Right, so lots of things.
Dead, you know.
Who's dead?
Two of the Beatles.
Congratulations for working that one out. Well done.
You said you want them to be re-released.
I'm talking about Funko Pops, you fool. There's also a vinyl soda Queen Freddie Mercury pre-order, and that's expected in the new year. But it's quite a cute little figure. It's not a Funko Pop. It's just like a little figurine representation of Freddie Mercury. Right then, I've sort of padded out quite well, actually. I don't know why I bothered, really, because I could have been sat watching this rather exciting football match. I'm preparing to watch...
You'd rather talk to us.
to a degree, but there's stuff going on. And I'm really disappointed I can't remember all the stuff I've watched this week, because normally I'm able to tell you guys what's worth watching. Everybody been watching Bake Off?
Oh, definitely.
Very good.
Ina and I had to start last year's again because Ina really, really, really wants to carry on watching Bake Off. And she's not used to this having to wait a week for another episode.
Dearie me.
Old-timey TV.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I've had to justify adverts and things to her as well.
What I did forget to mention last week, Debbie, was I stumbled across the trailer for Serious Star Trek Discovery, which I'm exceptionally excited about.
Brilliant.
Really looking forward to that.
I've nearly finished, you know, I'm nearly caught up with Tom on watching The Boys season 2 as well. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I am continuing the Star Trek original series watch with Fred, and she's really enjoying it. We just started the second season, so...
I are starting Darling Buds of May, because she really wants to watch that.
Alan T. Butcher says, I've sent feedback. And then he says, Cineworld said it's temporary. Well, I hope you're right, Alan, because a friend of mine, Macy, who's the boss at Cineworld Newport, is a very, very nice lady, and she's actually exceptionally pretty. Alan T. Butcher then says, grimly, they will sack everyone, but it sounds like they will, with Mothball, the establishments to reopen. Will Mothball the establishments to reopen in the future? Well, I hope Maisie keeps her job at least, where she's the boss and everything. Right then, I suppose that's it. Next time, we will be watching and reviewing. Is it Remembrance of the Daleks?
Yes, it is.
It is indeed.
So that'll be fun, because they actually managed to afford
us a
very special effect on when the Dalek shot someone. That's the first time it was used, and it's something they've kept for the new era of Doctor Who. There's only one thing I nearly forgot to play, actually, for this episode, and I would have been really telling you guys off if you hadn't reminded me. We'll save the proper telling off for Kirby, because that's what he's here for. Only Kirby, that's you're here for tellings off, aren't you?
Yes.
Kirby.
Have
you pay to be there to be told off. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. This one is 4 episodes.
Yes. Well, who did we nearly forget, everybody? Yes. You've even forgotten who you've forgotten, haven't you? Well, I'll play this bit of audio. It might remind you.
Dragonfire, I know that it has a mixed reception, because Stephen Moffat, for instance, who's a big fan of a lot of the Seventh Doctor stuff, really doesn't rate Dragonfire. But I think that he's missing a trick there, because Dragonfire is where the Seventh Doctor really gets going, because we've enlisted a companion who suited our objectives, which is the wonderful Sophie Aldred as Ace. And we had these fabulous scripts by Ian Briggs. Now, Briggs, I think, is one of the great Doctor Who writers, and he's also a tremendous writer of character. So he was a wonderful writer to be the first one to put flesh on the bones of the new companion. So I think it was a perfect wedding of writer and material for that. I do think the show, as it comes out, as it turned out, doesn't live up to the scripts. The design is very variable. John Adcott, the designer, did a fabulous job, but some of the special effects work, like the ice statue that is being created, just looks like a melted lolly. I mean, and there's a lot of things wrong with it. There's a famous scene where the Doctor hangs over an ice abyss for no reason. If anybody's interested, you can
to be an actual cliffhanger.
Yeah, but you can, if you look at Ian Briggs' original script, that's not what happens. I blame a lot of these distortions and infelicities on the director.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Clough, who's a very nice man, but you know, I think he should hold the bag for that particular sequence. But there's many brilliant things about it, and I think that New Who begins there.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. So there you go. Andrew thinks that New Who has now begun.
Yeah, New Who.
Okay. So
we discussed
this before with Ace's arrival, about the way the technology changes and how it does feel like it's New Who.
Hmm.
Yes, Master.
Yes.
Just letting people know if they are interested. We've spoken about Remembrance of the Daleks before in 2011 with episode 64 featuring you, me, Alicia, and Ben.
Well, thank you for that. Does that mean we don't have to do it next week then? Or?
No.
It's redundant now.
Yeah, we don't want to hear Mary doing... Mm.
Actually, I believe the only one of the ones left, the only one we've never spoken about is Survival, which surprises me.
Okay, well, we will be talking about that eventually. Anyway, next week, like I say...
Longer. We're going to be done with these things at the beginning of December.
I've got a funny feeling you might have mentioned that at the beginning of the show, but I'll find that when I re-listen to it back. Magic is set here.
I haven't heard Ian say anything for a little bit.
Because he's biting his lip at the moment, aren't you, Ian? Nope. He's falling asleep.
I got my Kirby dartboard practicing.
Right,
names
then.
Improving vastly this way.
It's now Aston Villa 6,
why are you
Liverpool 2.
Me?
This is a really good game. I'm going to be watching Match of the Day tonight. Oh, it's a penalty. No, it's not. Aston Villa 6, Liverpool 2.
Watching Match of the Night today or something?
Night today? What are you about?
And I like how he says, why would you be dartboarding me? And then asks that.
Right, okay.
You answered your own question, Kirby.
Well, next week, like I say, Remembrance of the Daleks. So, unless anybody's got anything else to say, which hopefully not, I can watch the rest of this football match, get a bath, watch Murder on CCTV, and maybe eat one of my delicious...
Maybe prevent the murder if you're seeing it on CCTV.
Home-baked shortbread, because the muffins came out rather well, Debbie. Thanks to my Aldi's mixer, which is fantastic.
Oh, nice, I want to see that.
What, the mixer?
Mm.
Oh, Master's
it's
also
in my kitchen.
You didn't.
It's in my kitchen.
Master's also posting videos of foxes in his back garden.
Oh, you've been stalking my TikTok account again, have you?
Of course.
Hmm. Right then, I've got a few.
You may have to give Ellen a break at some point.
Right, until next time, thank you for listening, watching, taking part in the show. Until next time, please come back. Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye.
Toodles. Yeah.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.